This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Wednesday, November 6th. The politics of impeaching President Trump may or may not have changed in the last 24 hours, but the facts on the ground have. For one thing, House Democrats have now announced that televised public impeachment hearings will begin a week from today, next Wednesday. Republicans have been complaining about the closed-door process. We'll see how they like it when the witnesses, like Ambassador William Taylor, who's scheduled for day one, say their piece out loud. Fasten your seatbelts. And if bombshell is an overused word in stories like this, and it is, maybe it does actually apply to something that changed in the last day. The Trump appointee who told Ukraine that military aid was dependent on announcing an investigation into the Bidens and a 2016 election conspiracy theory now admits it. Gordon Sondland, ambassador to the EU, first denied delivering that message in sworn testimony before the House impeachment investigators, but he has now issued a revised statement that says he did in a September 1st meeting with Ukrainian presidential aide Andrei Yermak. Sondland now says, quote, "I now recall speaking individually with Mr. Yermak, where I said resumption of U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided the public anti-corruption statement that we had been discussing for many weeks," unquote. And what were those discussions over many weeks? Well, Sondland had also testified to this timeline that began in May. Quote, "It started as talk to Rudy. Then others talked to Rudy. Corruption was mentioned. Then as time went on, then let's get the Ukrainians to give a statement about corruption. And then no, corruption isn't enough. We need to talk about the 2016 election and the Burisma investigations," unquote. Burisma, as you know by now, means the Bidens. Hunter Biden was on the board. And Sondland's revised statement yesterday adds another important piece, quote, "I also recall some question as to whether the public statement could come from the newly appointed Ukrainian prosecutor general rather than from President Zelensky directly. I came to understand that, in fact, the public statement would need to come directly from President Zelensky himself," unquote. So we now have the most directly involved Trump appointee yet admitting to what the Democrats are calling a bribery or extortion scheme. John Bolton called it a drug deal, according to the testimony by Trump appointee Fiona Hill, to solicit a TV soundbite from a foreign head of state announcing an investigation of Joe Biden, the leading Democratic presidential hopeful, or Ukraine won't get military aid that Congress had approved to protect them from Russian aggression. The facts are becoming indisputable. But will that matter politically, and should it, to whether the president is actually removed from office? Our guest is the editor of National Review, Rich Lowry, who has argued previously that what Trump did here was wrong but should not result in impeachment or removal from office. Rich also has a new book that we'll talk about separately later in the segment called The Case for Nationalism, How It Made Us Powerful, United, and Free. Rich, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Is the Gordon Sondland reversal a bombshell, according to you?
I think it's a bombshell, but I think we've had the basic lay of the land here for a while. The call was inappropriate. All the pros listening in on the call were freaked out. It's been a mistake to say it's perfect because it gives the Democrats the easy layup, constantly show, oh, here's another insider who's freaked out about the call. Oh, and we got another one for you. And do we mention? Here's yet another one. And then clearly from the beginning, you know, there's not explicit quid pro quo on the call, but it's suggestive, and certainly suggestive when combined with the unexplained withholding of the Ukrainian aid. And as we've learned more in these opening statements and now these depositions, it's become clearer that the aid was used to squeeze the Ukrainians to try to get these investigations. And as soon as we saw Bill Taylor, the ambassador to Ukraine's opening statement, directly contradicting Sondland on some important things, it's clear Sondland, his testimony was not credible, and he had cleaning up to do, and what he did yesterday was clean it up.
Because he was afraid of perjury, actually, right?
Yeah.
Lying to Congress charges.
Yeah. So it's hard to believe that you forget the kind of conversation he claims that he forgot.
You said on Meet the Press on Sunday, you need the enormity of the offense to match that severe and unprecedented punishment And even if this was improper, and I think elements of it were, I don't think it reaches that level. And after Gordon Sondland, I take it from your first answer that that's still your belief.
Yeah, because I'm not shocked by Sondland's revelation, because it's clear something like this was going on. And I mean, we just need to realize impeachment and removal is unprecedented. It's literally never happened in our history. I think the best case for Democrats is, well, you know, you guys impeached Clinton in the House without any really hope of removing him, so we're going to do the same thing. But I thought that was part of the point, though, of Pelosi's position prior to the last month or so, which is we're not going to do a partisan impeachment because it, you know, it's a censure vote with a lot of bells and whistles. But I think the removal part, it's not just that it partially overturns an election. That's always true. In this case, you're short-circuiting a re-election that he has a really plausible chance of winning. And I think that's different. I think as a practical matter, it should make the standard even a little bit higher. And if it were to happen, if you were to be removed, you'd have tens of millions of Americans not accepting the result. And there's no way, to me, it makes our poisonous political debate in this country any better.
So it matters to you that Nixon was forced to resign because of Watergate after his reelection. Bill Clinton was impeached by the House after his reelection. The fact that we would be only months away from the public being able to weigh in on Donald Trump makes a big difference to you in this case.
Yeah, as a practical political matter. Obviously, it's not a constitutional standard, doesn't address this at all. I just think it, as a practical matter, it should weigh. And the problem at the end of the day here is Trump has problems separating himself from his office. He doesn't think institutionally. He doesn't think constitutionally. That's a problem. It's also something that's not new or wasn't foreseeable in 2016, and the people elected him anyway, and I think they should have the opportunity to do it again or not.
Democrats are increasingly arguing that the enormity of the offense does rise to that level because, for one thing, bribery is one of the two crimes specified in the Constitution as worthy of impeachment, and this looks like bribing President Zelensky with military aid in a White House meeting or soliciting a bribe, as our guest yesterday, Ellie Mostal, described it, soliciting a bribe from Zelensky of that announcement about Biden and 2016. Is it not bribery or its legal twin, extortion, to you?
Those arguments, they just seem to me, Brian, to be trying to bootstrap up the gravity of the offense via metaphor. You know, if it were actual a bribe, you wouldn't have to make the metaphor and it'd be evident to everyone. And
why is it a metaphor, though? If Gordon Sondland and, you know, others were out there saying, we'll give you this if you give us that.
Because horse trading at a certain level is, you know, Mick Mulvaney was right about this, horse trading is an element of high-level diplomacy.
But you know where that argument goes, that horse trading is an element of high-level diplomacy when it has to do with policy and the interests of the countries involved, not at all legitimate when it has to do with the personal political fortunes of the president as a candidate.
So that I agree with. But if the argument is that just the nature of a trade is a bribe, then a lot of diplomacy is a bribe. So that's where I think that argument falls down. If you're arguing this is an improper horse trading, that I agree with. But that doesn't make it a bribe.
But to you know, put a pin in it, why doesn't that make it a bribe under the Constitution?
Because a huge element of diplomacy would be a bribe. When Trump, you know, to go to Mick Mulvaney's press conference, when he says, well, Trump squeezed Central America by withholding their aid to get them to change their migration policy, that by this standard would also be a bribe. That this particular ask was improper because there was no significant public interest in it, that I'm on board with.
You also said on Meet the Press, I just don't think removing him would actually, at the end of the day, be good for the country. It would blow a hole of legitimacy in the center of our national politics that would take years to heal. Do you want to expand on that legitimacy or years to heal argument?
Yeah, I think obviously we live in a time with a lot of populist passions. We've seen it on the right with Donald Trump. We've seen it on the left with Bernie Sanders and others. And our institutions are under stress and their legitimacy is in doubt and in question more than ever before. And there is a big dose of not just skepticism, but paranoia about our governing elite. So if you had, 20 Republican senators deciding to just short circuit the election and dump him, you wouldn't have, you know, there'd be a huge element of Republican Party that just wouldn't accept it and say this is kind of a, I hate this word, but a coup. And why couldn't you just let him run and let the people decide? And I think that would be a poison in our public life.
And the Democrats increasingly see letting Trump get away with the corruption, as they would see it, of the presidency for his personal advantage as the bigger risk to blowing a hole in the legitimacy of our national politics, to use your phrase. Why would that not be that, according to you?
Well, I'm a big believer, actually, that Congress should be more protective and jealous of its powers and its prerogatives than it has been for decades. I have no problem with Democrats making an enormous fuss over this. I have no problem with public hearings. I have no problem with the investigation. I have no problem with, you know, a scandal on par with Iran-Contra, those who are old enough to remember that. Somewhat similar, you know, there are back channels involved, and it, you know, there are big public hearings.
But again, if the Reagan administration was subverting the will of Congress on aid to the Nicaraguan Contras and, you know, illegal hostages for weapons deal with Iran, that was because Reagan and his people saw it as in the U.S. national interest.
Right.
So different from Trump not caring about the U.S. national interest and just trying to do something for his advantage.
Well, the point here is I don't have a problem with Congress making a big deal of it. It's just impeaching, as a practical matter, they're not actually going to remove him, despite our discussion of removal. So what they're going to do is impeach him, and he very well may be impeached and win re-election. So what does that do to the impeachment power? One. Two, Nancy Pelosi has to have the foresight to realize here, this ends an enormous celebration for Donald Trump, justifiably or not. He's going to get acquitted in the Senate. He's going to have a rally on the South Lawn of the White House. So I'm just not sure going down this path even serves the Democrats' interest in holding him accountable. It's true the impeachment will be, you know, part of his Wikipedia entry going forward, but it's not as though he's going to have his tail between his legs after this.
You brought up Iran-Contra as a comparison. Many Dems would say this is so much worse than Watergate, which was covering up a single campaign break-in, or Bill Clinton lying under oath about sex. Even just the Ukraine part is worse, they'll say, but also that it continues a pattern of abusing his power and obstructing justice, as he tried to do in all those instances in the Mueller report, criminal stuff that repeatedly spits at the rule of law in this strongman, un-American kind of way. Are you arguing that it's not that serious?
I'm arguing it's not that serious, but it's improper. That's where I am, Brian. And again, sort of.
But do you want to make those comparisons? Because certainly we're hearing that from the Democrats.
I think if you want to go to the Mueller probe, the comparison I come back to was the order, or the purported order, to Don McGahn, then the White House counsel, to effectively fire or sideline Robert Mueller. Trump has this conversation with McGahn. Whatever was exactly said, McGahn takes it as a directive to go after Mueller, thinks about it, says, I don't think I can do this. I'm really going to resign. And the other officials, no, don't do that. You know, let's see if we can reverse this. Isn't it a good idea? And nothing happens.
Corey Lewandowski, same thing. Do this.
Right.
He didn't do it.
Doesn't do it. And, you know, at the end of the day, the Ukrainians get their money without making even a statement. Not only did they not investigate Joe Biden, they didn't even say they're going to investigate Burisma. And if you abstract from the Bidens, Burisma is a shady company. And there was a question that it should, you know,
right,
how it
but
arose
that seems
and
to
how
be
it got so rich.
The only example of Ukrainian corruption that Trump is concerned about.
Yeah, no, that's entirely pretextual. But my point is that this also, it was confused, it was ambiguous, it was internally contested. Some of the key players, including the ambassador, are pushing back against it constantly. And for whatever reason, we'll learn more about this, it didn't happen. So I don't see
right.
the real concrete harm to U.S. foreign policy.
And Zelensky didn't ever make that announcement, from what we know, probably because he saw it ultimately not in the interest of Ukraine to be tagged as taking a partisan side in American politics when they're so dependent
yeah.
on this country.
But
no
in
matter-
part because U.S. officials, including Trump administration officials, were telling them that. So I think at times you could have had any of these people under a lie detector
and
test
that's true.
And say,
there was
what is yeah. U.S. policy towards Ukraine?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have known.
Right.
Now, is that good?
Right.
No.
But again, the Dems will push back and say, just because they didn't do it in the cases in the Mueller investigation and in this case, doesn't make it as bad a crime on Trump's part. Attempted bribery is still bribery. Attempted obstruction of justice is still as bad under the law.
Yeah. So it's true, it doesn't make the scheme any more proper that it wasn't carried out. But as a practical matter, that it wasn't carried out, again, I think has to weigh. And we're not talking about attempted bribery. We're not talking about attempted murder. We're talking about, at a legal level here, attempted impoundment, which it is just does not strike me as an offense as grave as metaphors that people mention.
And so people will go back and forth on bribery or just metaphorical bribery. Let me get your take on the politics of the Senate. Assume that Trump will get impeached by the House and a Senate trial will happen. Let me use Lindsey Graham as maybe something of an indicator, but you tell me. Here is Senator Graham in September.
If you're looking for a circumstance where the President of the United States was threatening the Ukraine with cutting off aid unless they investigated his political opponent, you would be very disappointed. That does not exist.
Well, interesting. Now it apparently exists. That was Lindsey Graham in September. Here's Lindsey Graham speaking in October to Axios HBO.
Show me something that is a crime. If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing.
Well, we now have it outside the phone call. But here is Graham yesterday being asked by a reporter about Gordon Sondland's new testimony.
Gordon Sondland reversed himself in new testimony to the House impeachment investigators, saying he does believe Ukraine military aid was contingent upon the launch of politically motivated probes. In his revised statement, he now remembers telling a top Ukraine official on September 1st that hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid to Ukraine would likely be held up unless the government announced investigations of Trump's political rivals.
That's his opinion. All I can say is that the president of the Ukraine didn't believe that. And the president of the United States on the phone call didn't say that. So all this is just intrigue to me.
So, Rich, is Lindsey Graham showing himself to be a liar or a Trump loyalist despite the facts? And is he a good gauge of Senate Republicans overall, in your opinion, post-Sondland bombshell?
Well, clearly he's determined to oppose this on whatever grounds. And as we started our discussion, I think it's foolish for Republicans to have wrapped themselves around the axle on these points about the phone call and the quid pro quo. But he is indicative of where most Republicans will be. You know, privately, there's disquiet. There's frustration that after the Russia thing was closed down, you know, two or three days later, Trump steps in it again with Ukraine. But I think most of them sincerely believe this is not an offense that justifies removal. And then impeachment, inherently a political process. They're also politically aware that if they were to remove the president, it would destroy any chances of any Republican nominee, whether it's Pence or someone else, winning in 2020. So that's obviously weighs in our calculations as well.
Carolyn Princeton, you're on WNYC with Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. Hi, Carol.
Oh, hi. My question was, could the speaker give examples of what would be impeachable offenses in his mind? What kind of conduct that the president could engage in that would reach the level, and not just like saying bribery, but examples of those activities?
Treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. So high crime and misdemeanor, I'll give you a hypothetical that I think everyone agree. You know, this is it. So Trump tells Beijing, you can have Taiwan on the condition that, you know, I think I'm going to lose in 2020. In 2021, there'll be the biggest, tallest Trump Tower in Beijing ever. Obviously, that's a high crime and misdemeanor. We can come up with other examples, but it's something so shocking that it's no longer becomes a partisan issue. And this is why Nixon would have been impeached and removed. The Republican reflex was to defend Nixon the way they're defending Trump. The walls and the cliche about Trump really were closing in on Nixon. And after a while, Republicans acknowledged it, and it was a matter of consensus in the country. And he had to go. I don't think you're getting that consensus based on anything like these facts in this current case.
So are you acknowledging that you think what Trump did was worse than what Nixon did, just that the partisan divide has made removal less possible?
I think what Nixon did was worse. You know, it involved covering up not a metaphorical crime, but a real crime, and not thinking about covering it up, but really covering it up.
Last thing on this, and since we've been talking in the historical context of Watergate, Iran-Contra, Clinton, let me get your reaction to this phone call we got from a listener wondering about this impeachment process in an even broader sweep of American history.
Hi, I'm Justin from Accokeek, Maryland. So there's been all these impeachments through history, you know, like four of them, I think. And they seem to be, you know, just like on a curve, they seem to be becoming more and more frequent. And I've seen graphics lately showing kind of the divisions among the political parties. And I was wondering, like, is this kind of a symptom of the extreme polarization of our governing bodies? And if so, how does that bode for the future? Like, in 50 years, is every president going to finish their term with impeachment? Or, you know, especially since Trump's kind of opened the floodgates for what is and is not capable for a president to kind of carry out. Just curious about that.
So Justin from Maryland is right. To the extent that we had Andrew Johnson in the 1860s alone in U.S. history as an impeached president until Nixon 74, Clinton 98, and likely Trump 2019, pretty close together. Does it signify something bipartisan and something important in the big sweep of American history?
Well, I don't know whether the reaction to this, assuming it, you know, he's not removed, which I think is a very good assumption, that I don't know whether this heralds, as the caller says, okay, you know, if Elizabeth Warren's gets elected and Republicans control the House at any point, she's getting impeached, or whether there'll be a reaction against this, just saying this really proves this is a pointless process. But I will say on the polarization, it's very notable. There's an NBC Wall Street Journal poll this past weekend, and support for impeachment and removal, 49%, Hillary Clinton's popular vote in 2016. Opposition to impeachment and removal, 46%. Trump's popular vote in 2016. So as I said on the Meet the Press Sunday, nothing's happened. You know, this is trench warfare. It's bloody. It feels like every day something important is happening. But at the end of the day, everyone is dug in and we're exactly the same place. And this New York Times poll the other day, Siena poll of the battleground states, shows the path is still there for Trump, but it's the same path as 2016. It's an electoral college, likely without a popular vote victory, and maybe even losing more of the popular vote than he did last time.
Rich Lowry is editor of National Review, and now the author of The Case for Nationalism, How It Made Us Powerful, United, and Free. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.